Monday, everybody. Welcome back to the Couchside Judges. I'm Scott Fontana. Follow me on Twitter at Scott_Fontana.
And I'm Dan Urban. Follow me at the Dan Urban. Follow the podcast at Couchside Judges. And make sure you read the scoring criteria.
Every single word. Don't skip them. Don't skim it. I don't know if you're a speed reader. Slow yourself down and read this thing.
Yes, please.
Especially because Dan said please. He's a polite man. Known for his manners. I don't know. Are you? Are you actually known for your manners?
I messed up the intro.
What'd you do?
I forgot to tell everyone to listen and subscribe on YouTube and everywhere else.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do that. Do the thing.
Yes.
All right. Maybe we should just go back from the top. Hit the music. No. Dan, this probably won't be as long of a program as we had last week because there's a little bit of a drop-off between UFC 300 and just PFL 3.
Yes.
Just a little bit. It's just the way it is. This is not an anti-PFL message. It's the world we live in, sir. There actually was no UFC this week at all, which I think is a good thing on a couple levels because it allows us to really soak in the events of what happened at UFC 300.
Yes, and it allowed Dana to post a video destroying the media.
When you say the media, to be clear, you mean like 80% of these people were like Redditors.
Ariel was on there,
you're right. Ariel also said a lot of things that were essentially defending Dana White and UFC 300, so he's just cherry-picking. They're just cherry-picking.
That's how it is.
Yeah. Well, I didn't make it because I didn't say anything, so whatever. Mm. The quality of UFC 300 I always thought was very deep and just didn't have that, like, oh my God headliner.
I had suggestions to make it better. They didn't take those, but... Well. It was still very good.
Count yourself lucky you didn't make it into the video then.
I would have loved to make it in the video.
Mm-hmm. You probably would.
I had no issues with it other than the main event wasn't Jim versus Islam.
Well, yeah.
That was my only issue.
Mm-hmm. They should have put that in. That would be way too much comedy for them. But anyway, a very serious group of people. We're not really here to talk about UFC too much, though, because, again, they are off this week. They are back next week. We'll talk about that at the end, I guess, because, you know, we're contractually obligated to. Well, not really, but, you know. look, there are fights happening at the Apex, so we kind of have to mention it. So, but at any rate, PFL will be the topic du jour today. Mostly, you know, from a contested round standpoint, it's going to be on PFL 3, the one that just happened on Friday over in Chicago. But I figured this would be a good chance for us to kind of just look back. And I know you didn't watch very closely the events that unfolded over the course of three PFL events. But do you have any takeaways from the first leg of this PFL season, the first three events?
No.
Not at all. Cool. Moving on.
They still got the stupid stats on the screen, the stupid AR scorecard, the stupid
ghost it's computerized page. Scoring now. They've changed the name of it every year.
I mean, there's a gimmick for everything. Everything.
You're a big That's fan it. Of the ring announcer.
Sure.
Or the cage announcer.
Yeah.
Big fan of his.
Yeah. I mean, where's Lillian Garcia?
She lost her voice like in the middle of an event. That was weird. And then we never heard from her again. I actually am very curious what happened to her. I was enjoying her. She was fine. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, safe to say you don't really give...
It's fine. PFL's fine. It's just fine. I just kind of expect more for an ESPN.
What are you expecting at this point? It's the same... Like, we've seen this product for years.
I know. I just expect... I'm happy that their pacing has gotten incredibly better.
It's definitely better. We can turn it on, and all of a sudden there's a fight.
They have quality fights. I was entertained by the fights, for sure.
I think absolutely the quality of the field is vastly improved.
The gimmicks are what just, like, turns me off.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think that's absolutely a fair critique of PFL in general, is just the fact that a lot of it is very gimmicky. It's super gimmicky, and it doesn't feel like it's necessary to be so gimmicky. I mean, by the very nature, it's the season, right? They have to beat it down your throat that, yes, there's 6 points for a first-round finish and 5 for a second and 4 for a third and 3 points if you win a decision.
And no elbows.
And no elbows. for no acceptable reason. I'm sorry. Whatever they've said has never been enough. It is dumb to not have elbows in mixed martial arts.
Really silly.
But I will say, I like you, I think the pacing has gotten better. I still think they should revisit the way they air the product during what would be an ESPN commercial break when they're showing the ESPN Plus feed, because, well, sometimes we get hot mics and stuff, and well, we all know what happened there now at this point. But
I think
just in general, do something, put something on, just air like a video package on that.
The Big John implementation is great. I think
I like the way they do it with Big John coming in and just kind of giving the take there. I think it's good. I'm curious when he films that, because it's talking over like the first like 45 seconds of the next round. And I can't imagine that he's doing that live. It's probably recorded between rounds, but imagine if he was, and then he had to comment on the round that he just saw, but he only watched 4 minutes of it because he was talking over the first one. That'd be weird. So I'm gonna just cross my fingers that I was right the first time. He just films that thing immediately, and then they share it when it's time, because it is good. It's good to have. I would like to see the UFC incorporate something like that with an official. Clearly they don't get along with John McCarthy, but you know, maybe one day there's another official they can bring in to do that.
Ron McCarthy
is still an active judge.
They will.
He officiated the main event of UFC 300.
We'll have father versus son.
Yes,
in the Mike Pereira position.
Yes. For the football fans out there.
Although I think Gene Steratore has taken over as the more, premier official.
Well, Gene Steratore also does the college basketball.
Mm.
He is able. He's like a double threat.
Yeah.
Imagine John McCarthy stepping in and doing boxing, too.
Be something.
It'd be kind of like that. I don't think he would. I don't think that's where his talents lie. Yeah, my takeaway more or less is that I appreciate the quality of the field has definitely improved, and that realistically, by the completion of most of these seasons, you could be looking at some men and women who legitimately belong amongst some of the best in the world, as opposed to, hey, they just so happened to get lucky enough to be in this field of people that they were good enough to be the $1 million winner in.
And now how long we gotta wait for a second regular season fight?
June. Early June.
And then playoffs are August.
Playoffs are, yeah, typically August. They already announced the dates and locations for the second leg of the PFL season.
Mm.
They said it during the broadcast. I know we kind of cherry-picked Dan and I. I had it on all day. Dan is not going to be bothered to sit and watch PFL more than he needs to.
I was working. Ran into our good friend and fan of the show, Ari, again.
Oh, the actor.
Yeah.
The one you paid to
yeah, pretend. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's good to see him. Poker tournament. It was a fun time.
Mm-hmm. None of my fans ever come to see me.
Hey, I'm special.
You are. You always have been. That is a fact, my friend. Yeah, I guess on the whole, I would say PFL has improved. It's still stuck in a lot of its old ways. So that's probably not going to change over the rest of this year. And it probably won't change between now and next year either. But hey, baby steps, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as the actual action, before we get over to the contested rounds, and honestly, we can't say too much as far as like takeaways about the actual field and that kind of thing, because it's going to be a one-sided conversation where Scott answers with his thoughts and Dan just says, okay, I didn't watch, but cool. But suffice to say, there are fighters that I came away very impressed with, which we'll touch on as we kind of go through this. But there is one thing, again, before we get to contested rounds, for the adventures in officiating that we should get to kind of in this early part of the show, I think, right? The victory that Brendan Loughnane picked up over Pedro Carvalho, first round TKO, gets the 6 points in the PFL standings. He is the leader, has the edge on finish time in the first round with another fighter who has a 6 point, what, a quick six, is that what they call in the PFL? Quick six,
quick
right?
Six.
Yeah. Yep. That's their branding for that. But Brendan Loughnane's win came with a little bit of a stink being made about it, sir. I don't think anyone was questioning whether Brendan Loughnane was winning that fight at that moment, but there were a lot of people saying that referee Kevin McDonald, who taught the judging course that we participated in at ABC and also was in charge of the, there were two refereeing courses that happened at ABC. There was one for, I guess, for lack of a better term, beginners, right?
And I think it was beginner. Was it beginners? Beginner and advanced.
Okay, beginner and advanced. I couldn't remember the names. That was taught by Blake Rice, who actually worked the main event of this PFL event. But Kevin McDonald led the other one, the advanced course. So obviously entrusted by the ABC to teach, and very much clearly a veteran official in his own right. But yes, his stoppage here came under fire as being too early. Dan, did you have any thoughts on that before we kind of go deeper into the show?
I mean, well, Carvalho was doing the Nick Diaz, you know, on all fours, you know, versus Paul Daly defense thing.
Mm-hmm.
He ate a lot of unanswered shots.
It's fair to say.
I don't think he was hurt. I think probably Randy Couture is on, you know, probably good to speculate that he probably thought when he dove for the leg, he was hurt, mm-hmm. possibly.
A little sloppy and yeah. That way, yeah.
So he erred on the side of caution and protected the fighter, I guess.
Sure.
But he really wasn't. I mean, after the fact, you know, we could see he's really not hurt. So
no, he's really not. It's a rough stoppage. I think I would just frame it like that. It's not a good stoppage. I've seen some of the other stoppages that Kevin McDonald has come under fire for in the past. The TJ Dillashaw one against Henry Cejudo comes to mind. I thought that was fine. I defend that one still. Mm-hmm. I don't have any problem with that one. Was it? It was also Iwan Kutelaba, right?
Yeah, Kutelaba. That's all against Magomedov.
Yes, absolutely.
That's all on him.
Yeah, that was a different situation. This is one that, you know, and I say this with a lot of respect for Kevin McDonald as not just an official in terms of him training other officials, but I think he's actually a very good referee. But yeah, this is a bad stoppage. I can't really defend it too hard. I would think he saw what he saw, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's elements to this we're not seeing because we're not seeing the look in his eyes. We only have the behind view, right?
Well, if you notice, after one shot, Kevin jumps in like, oh.
Yeah.
And then he backs off.
And I think that's the thing, too, is and I saw someone point this out during the discourse on social media that kind of came from this, right? I can't remember who it was at this point. Maybe Kaposa. But someone pointed out that, look, if you jump in then, it's probably not as bad.
Mm.
But, like, he let it go. And he didn't seem that bad. So when you're looking at it and it's like, okay, you've got some time to really think it through and he still doesn't seem that bad, why are we stopping it now? But it's tricky because if he was close to doing it before, maybe he saw something else that made him, all right, now I have to do it.
Mm.
I still think it's a rough stoppage, but without all the feedback, it is hard to get into that one too crazy. I would also make the case that probably Pedro Carvalho is still not really going to come back in this fight. There's a lot of ways where he can.
I think anything can happen, mm-hmm. but
I'd say the percentage is low of him actually coming back and really doing something on this.
I would agree.
So,
I mean, I've seen way worse from Angel Hernandez, so...
We're not talking about baseball,
I'm
not, sir.
I'm just going to say.
The Couchside Umpire is a different program.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Hey, we can, that'd be something.
Interesting. Not for me. Not for me. but I bet you can find someone to do Couchside Umpires with. But yes, again, not the greatest of stoppages, but I do question how much we need to worry about that because of the fact that I do think the natural conclusion of this fight was probably still going to head somewhere in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So, but hey, when we're talking about points of stoppages and when fights end and that kind of thing, let's say Carvalho is able to hang on and just get his way over the next 2+ rounds and get himself the distance, but lose on the cards. Loughnane loses 3 points there. So it does change the standings. It kind of messes things up with PFL a little bit more. You know, it's not a zero sum game so much when we're talking about degrees of winning that count.
What is it? 6 points is almost a guarantee to move on.
Just about. Although last year it was in this particular division. This was the first time that PFL had semifinalists that did not earn 6 points. Or, excuse me, the other way around. There was a fighter who's had 6 points. That was Chris Wade, who did not qualify for the semifinals. That was the first time someone had 6 and didn't make it. So I completely framed that wrong the first time. But the second time, I got it right, guys. So pay attention to me there. Yeah, so we're not cutting it.
Pedro, just go out there and finish in the first round.
Yeah. And realistically, at this point, too, Brent Loughnane kind of just needs to get a win to absolutely lock it in. I think 7 points would be in total automatic. 6 is usually, but 7 is definitely.
And is it true you get a bonus, extra bonus point for a sub in the first round?
I'm not aware of that.
Oh.
I think that's just wishful thinking on your part.
Okay.
Yeah. The unanimity report for this one. I said that right again. I've been better ever since I bottomed out, right?
I think ever since when I wrote, I broke it down in syllables for you.
Break it down in syllables for me as if I was a child. Thank you for that. Or as if I was learning a new language. there were 19 rounds scored in all at PFL 3. 13 of them were unanimous for a 68.4% rate. That's fine. It's about average, give or take. Two of these, by the way, though, were 9-8 splits, so a little higher when you take into account that we're only talking about winners in 4 cases.
Hmm.
Let's move over to those contested rounds, and I think we need to start with the fights that we're debating who won the rounds, because they had 2 rounds each in 2 fights.
Yeah.
Because we've got 2 fights that look like unanimous 29-28s, but they're deceptive. Yes, these are the ones that they're Dan's biggest bugaboo. Doesn't expect he's going to talk about it, and all of a sudden it's like, yep, we got 2 rounds out of that one. It's like, ah, what are we doing? So let's start with the one that was higher, or not higher on the card, earlier on the card. Adam Borich, former Bellator featherweight challenger, getting the win over former Bellator bantamweight Enrique Barzola. Unanimous nod, 29-28 all around. But wait, rounds 1 and 3 are split with the same judge. In this case, Sal D'Amato, in the minority. Judges Brandon Mason and Scott, don't call me Scott with 2 T's, Jones, were in the majority. Sorry, he spells it wrong. Someone needs to tell him. He just forgot the T. It's okay. These things happen in MMA. They're in the majority. Sal D'Amato's in the minority. We're going to get to the bottom of where we feel about this, starting with round 1. Dan, what happened?
Yeah, a very close round, but early on, and for most of the round, I thought Borich was landing at will. Hard leg kicks. He drops Barzola. Barzola late, though, lands something that wobbles Borich a bit. I'm not really sure what it is, but he's definitely hurt. Gets ragdolled. A few mat returns and, you know, kind of slamming him a little bit. Gets his back taken. Lands some strikes from there. However, here's where I land is Borich has Barzola stuck on the cage and he lands a bunch of lefts until the bell rings. That's what keeps Borich ahead for me, 10-9.
I did not go that way. I went the other way. I went for Barzola. I think he definitely did. Not definitely. I in my assessment, I think he was able to take it to the point where he wasn't able to necessarily relinquish it once again with that late kind of flourish. Because there's a period of this fight where Borich straight up disappears. He doesn't do anything. It's not just because his back was taken.
Well, no, in that period, he gets whatever hit hurts him. Still don't even know on the replay.
Mm-hmm.
He gets ragdolled a little bit, and then he gets his back taken.
Yeah,
but I mean that's not a long part of the round, though.
It was necessarily, but there's a period of the fight where again he just disappears on me, and I think that Barzola is having some real good success here. And it's not just the fact that he takes it back, but he is landing those strikes from back there too. In a nice dominant position, which you like to see, right? You hate to see them just hold on to that back and like, not do anything with it. No, it's like, that's a good spot.
He was trying.
I think he's landing okay there. You know, probably not going to knock him out or anything, but those are good free, quote unquote, free shots, right? Like, nothing's going to come back to hurt him, so he can just have free reign to do what he wants there, and he was doing it. Could he have landed a little harder? I don't know, maybe, but, you know, I thought he did well there. I went the other way. I get it. There's nothing wrong with going for Borich here, but I did go for Barzola. So I sided with Sal D'Amato. You said Sal's wrong. You said he's a bad judge.
I didn't say these
things. You said those things just before. It's all on tape.
Never.
Rewind, find out. you had it for Borich. You had the majority. I had the minority with the Dan Urban 2023 Judge of the Year.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to round 3.
really close rounds. Both guys let it all go this round. Really just think Barzola landed the more impactful shots. Would have loved to have been cage-side for this round. I think this is a round where you need to be cage-side for, you know, for that perspective. On TV, it looks like a lot of shots may be missing coming from board side or not landing as cleanly. Very close round. Like I said, I want to be cage side. I want that perspective to score this round. But from what I got, I've got it for Barzola 10-9.
No, I went with for Borge here. So again, I sided with, you know, the judge that you obviously disrespect in Sal D'Amato.
All right, we're gonna keep this up.
We're gonna keep this up. it was close. This is super close. I don't really have a problem going either way, and I like your point that there are times where realistically it just helps to be in the room and seeing the fight live and getting that extra feedback, right? The noises, the kind of the feel, right?
Yeah.
There's a different feel when you're there.
And you can see so much better of the shots that are landing.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, for goodness sake, at least when you're in UFC and other promotions that will do this, you get a screen too. So you get two.
Mm-hmm.
Angles, you get to choose which one you want. So I don't see any problem with that. But yeah, it's close. I sided with Boric. It could have gone either way.
Mm-hmm.
So you again had it the same way as judges Mason and Jones. Jones, of course, doesn't know how to spell his first name. It is what it is.
Mm.
I'm sorry that your family gave you the wrong Scott. Let's. I think we move on from this, right? Let's move on to Kai Kamaka III. Getting the win over Bubba Jenkins. Again, a deceptive 29-28 all around, where we've actually got to talk about rounds one and two. And I'd like to point out, too, that I every time Kai Kamaka comes up, he's going to be on a Bellator card or something like that, at least in the past few years. I've always been interested in his fights. Like, you know what? That's the prelim I want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is. He made it into the field, and I did not think he was going to beat Bubba Jenkins. He goes out there, and he beats Bubba Jenkins. Nice win.
It's a good win for him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
3 points in standings. I almost kind of established him as maybe a bit of a dark horse in this field here. But yeah, we are split on rounds one and two. Just like the last fight, one judge, in this case, Brian Miner, is out each time. The majority position is held by judges Brian Pacillo and Rick Winter. So let's start with round one, Dan.
Yeah, I do think it's a pretty close round. Both guys landed good kicks. Kamaka, really good leg kicks. Some good punches. You get that one weird reaction off of a Kamaka strike that Jenkins gives. I thought it was a slip. Others may have read it as a knockdown. I do think that's what the round comes down to. But on the whole, I score for Jenkins 10-9.
No, I think it's really close. I think Jenkins is definitely winning early, but I do think Kamaka chips away. I don't necessarily think that knockdown was an actual knockdown, like the one we're talking about anyway.
Mm.
But I kind of just gave Kamaka the slight edge. I think John McCarthy was onto something, too, in his assessment that, hey, there's those kicks there of Kamaka. I think they're just a bit of a difference maker. So edged it out for me. So I sided with the minority judge here being Brian Miner, and it was Brian Pacillo and Rick Winter. You saw the position of giving that to Jenkins.
Yeah.
Let's go to round two.
Close on the feet. I think both guys landed, you know, pretty strong shots. Jenkins did get to the back. He attacked the neck, but nothing close, nothing really that great. I think the edge goes to Jenkins, no issue either way.
I had it for Kamaka. I like Kamaka here, but it's close. It is. These first two rounds are really just a competitive fight, is what it comes down to. But yeah, so I'm opposite of you here. I did give it to Kamaka. And thus, round three being a Kamaka round, I gave every round to Kamaka. You already gave two rounds to Bubba Jenkins, who is the loser in this case, so you actually technically scored Bubba Jenkins as your winner.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
But you're the one who's in the minority this time. I saw it as Judge Pacillo and Winter, whereas you saw it with Judge Miner. So as much as this was a unanimous 29-28, I had a 30-27, and you had a 29-28 the other way.
Mm, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't watch round three. I might have had a 30-27 the other way.
Well,
or would that have been bad? I didn't watch it.
I don't think it would have been great.
Okay.
I don't think it would have been great.
I did not see round three.
Let's leave it at that. Yeah. But yeah, that was really it for the round winner splits. We do have two rounds, one from each of separate fights.
The fun stuff.
The fun stuff in Dan's assessment. The degree of victory
In this case, for Shamil Musayev, who actually did get the win in round two over Logan Storley. Big upset. Knockout finish. 27 seconds into that second round. But the first round, this is, doesn't seem like it's going to be an interesting round. And then all of a sudden it is.
It was like 4 minutes of nothing. I think Storley landed like four jabs. And Musayev landed like two or three strikes. Storley was the one. He had a slight edge here. And then Musayev lands a kick to the body, hurts Storley a little bit there. Then he hurts him a whole bunch more with punches to the head, swarming on him, jumping knees. I think he dropped him two or three times. I mean, the damage is very, very high here.
And these are like real crisp punches he's throwing too. And fast.
Storley's in trouble. So, very high damage, 10-8 for me.
Just goes through the roof.
Yeah.
In terms of the damage meter, it's very low. It's very low. And then it starts to uptick pretty well, and then it's just like, oh my gosh, he's in real, real bad shape. Storley's basically doing a split.
Yeah, every
at the end of the round,
he gets popped, and like it's not like a traditional knockdown where he lands on his back or whatever. He does a split. It's like,
yeah, it doesn't matter what you call it. The man is very in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
You know that's no one would debate that. So. I think it goes from very much a blasé 10-9 to whoever you felt like had a slightly better edge over 4 minutes to, oh, yeah, I think we can give an 8 here to Shamil Musayev.
Blasé.
So I did. I gave the 8.
Blasé. Is there a Johnny Blasé?
Johnny Blasé?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar. Who's this?
I don't know. That's like a name. Mm. Blasé. I like that word. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
Where did you get blasé? I didn't say blasé.
You said blasé.
What did I say?
This round was a very blasé round.
I think I said blah.
No, you said blasé.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's late.
It is. It's very late. It just kind of a meh round, I guess.
Meh.
Yeah. Meh. But there was nothing meh about what Musayev did there down the stretch. Like I said, I gave an 8 here. You gave an 8 here. So we went against the majority, which was judges Brandon Mason and Scott, don't call me 2T, Jones. We sided with Judge Sal D'Amato, who I think realistically it's not that the other two judges don't have experience. They've worked several Bellator events at the very least that I can remember. I wouldn't say the most visible judges that we have, but I've seen their names. Absolutely. They've got some experience, but nobody has experience like Judge Sal D'Amato does. And I think probably with that experience comes a comfort level with being able to go from like basically like a almost a 10-10 of a 10-9 to a 10-8 in lightning fast time. And I think Sal D'Amato made the right call here to go for the 8. So I'm with him. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What does that mean for Judge D'Amato?
Couch side over.
Gotta get that in the mail. I don't think we had any last week.
He did not. Well, I don't know if we did. Actually, I can't remember.
All right. Well, it's been a while, and it's very late. That was almost 7 days ago, sir. one more round of the same variety, degree of victory. And Tyler Diamond's the one who got the victory in this case. Clear nod on the cards over Rodriguez, 30-26 two times, and a 30-27. So we're talking about round two. As a potential 10-8. What happened in round two?
Well, like you said, very good round for Diamond. Rodriguez, in the beginning of the round, gets a front headlock, and it looks like he's trying to get a guillotine, but they're just walking around the cage with each other. There's nothing close there, really. And then Diamond's landing big shots on Rodriguez, has him hurt. He's forcing him to dive for takedowns. I think he had good damage, and I think for the little part of the round, might have been a little bit more than a little part of the round, probably like the first half of the round. I thought he had some good dominance in the striking there. Like I said, a lot of the round took place on the ground with Diamond on top in half guard with his neck wrapped. I mean, there's really nothing there. Some punches here and there.
It's like one step away from a flan flu attempt.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it probably...
It's not like he could have gone for it, but I'm watching that position and I'm like, he's got nothing here. He probably just trying to let go.
Yeah, he was just wrapping him for something, I guess, to hold on to.
Yeah.
Duration for sure, not one of the D's, but I do think you can check damage and dominance, so I'm on the 8.
Yeah, I'm giving the 8 here too. I again, there's kind of a technically a borderline case. You've got a way out of it, but I like an 8 here. I think when you've got the damage in the mix, it certainly helps.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I basically just like the 8 enough here. But you can see it going either way. So we're in the minority, or majority, I should say. We agree in this case. Finally, we agree on something. Not agreed as much. Well, I guess we agreed on the last one, right? The other 8s. Mm-hmm. We don't see eye to eye on who wins these things. But we know what the degree is. And it's always an 8. No, it's not always an 8.
But it's also fun comparing the rounds.
It is. But yeah, so we're in the majority here with, again, judges Mason and Scott, spelled wrong, Jones. Sal D'Amato is on his own here. Gave the 9. There's a way to it. I don't like it that way. That's what it is. But again, you just don't think Sal D'Amato is a very good judge. You can't agree with anything he says, can you?
It's not nice.
You should take away his license, you were just saying before we got on there.
I was not saying
that. You were not saying that. That's true. Yeah, I made that up. Honestly, I make up most of the stuff on this show. Everything's fake. It's all fake.
Yeah. Rodriguez's eye was bested up bad this round.
It was. There's some real visible damage there.
Like that counts. But that's some of the stuff. I talk like the previous round, the guy's equilibrium's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this other guy, it's kind of, his eye's just hurt.
But the so eye,
it's,
I mean.
It's an important part of your body.
They say that.
There was a video of Bisping showing how he puts his eyes in.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like.
This is a good tangent.
It was fascinating.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, they're going to paint this one to look like this one. Right. Mm-hmm. He just put like the blank in. I'm like, that is creepy.
Yeah. He, I watched the documentary about him. It was, how long ago? It was a couple of years now. And they showed a little bit of that in there too. I don't know if it was a clip from that you saw or what, but.
No, this was new. I think it was new.
Oh, okay. He was getting a new eye put in.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Sometimes you got to replace the old eye.
Yeah, he does. He said because your
like my eye glasses are getting old. Shrinks. Sometimes I need to get new glasses. You know, yeah. Your eye gets old. Sometimes you got to replace your eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that is it for our contested rounds. We do have 6 finishes off of PFL 3, 4 KO or TKO, 2 by submission, 5 fights ended in the first round. Dan, what was your favorite?
Scott, sing it with me this time.
Mm.
Shamil. Shemazel, Musayev by KO Incorporated. You should know it now.
No. Why should I know it
now? You should pretend you know it now.
Why should I know it now?
You should pretend.
Is it because we already recorded this and we have to do it again?
Pretend you know it now.
I'm peeling back the curtain. We lost a portion of our previous recording, so we had to redo some of this show. And Dan was teaching me about, what was the show?
Laverne
and Shirley, which I did not watch. I never watched growing up or on Nick at Night. Like I had said last time, Mork and Mindy would come on and it was like, all right, that's time for bed now.
Did you watch Happy Days?
Not really.
Oh, I mean, no. They were Laverne and Shirley were like a spinoff of Happy Days.
That was my understanding.
Yeah. So you have heard of it.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Oh, good grief.
Good golly, Miss Molly. Is that what we're doing here?
Hit me with your favorite.
You can hit me with that cough then. Yeah. Gabriel Braga, I went with as a favorite, and obviously it's a good knockout, right? He gets the finish with 1 second left in the first round to preserve that 6-point quick six, like the PFL calls it. But for me, it's just the emotional catharsis that he has of getting that finish, getting that victory after months of grief in the wake of the murder of his father. I'm happy to see somebody who went through such a hard time come out the other side and find success, especially in something that meant something to both him and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And he did express that this is what he intends to honor his father's legacy and memory for the remainder of his career.
Mm-hmm.
He's a young fighter. Hopefully he's in it for a long time and giving us plenty of knockouts like that. That's a good finish for his highlight reel. It gets him off to a great start in his pursuit of $1 million to really better his life and change his life. So great, great knockout for Gabriel Braga. I like that.
Yeah. Awesome.
And that is it for PFL 3 and this leg of PFL. We're not going to be talking about PFL until it comes back around in June at Uncasville.
Uncasville,
Mohegan Sun.
And then South Dakota.
Yes, they're hitting up all the old Bellator stomping grounds. That's basically what it is. Hey, whatever. If it worked for them, did it work for them? Then it can work for PFL, maybe. But that is, like I said, that's it. Looking ahead to next week, we've got UFC Vegas 90 in the warehouse. 7 p.m. Eastern Time main card start on Saturday. Mateus Nicolau against Alex Perez. 125-pound men's flyweight headliner. I like that they're doing more of these. I don't know that this fight matters all that much, except for if Mateus Nicolau wins, because Perez is, he's lost, what, three in a row?
It's a lot more, yeah, three in a row. It's a lot more important of a fight than we've had in the past headlining these cards.
There is more than some, but yeah. I mean, think about earlier this year, though. Even at flyweight, we had Brandon Moreno against Brandon Royval. That was a really important flyweight headliner.
But it wasn't in the Apex.
True, true.
Just strictly Apex.
Yeah. Now, this was supposed to be Nicolau against Manel Kopp, who, you know, cannot show up for a flyweight fight and make the flyweight limit. Mm. He pulled out with a lot more time this time than, you know, the day of or the fight or the weigh-in or whatever, but nonetheless.
I wonder if he's ever considered just cutting off, like, a part of the body, like, you know, Ronnie Lotwood, to make weight.
What if he just,
he'd be like, just
fought
cut
at bantamweight? Like, he'd probably do okay there.
Can do that easy.
I think
too.
He would do fine at bantamweights, yeah. And I've been pushing for that for a while.
So I guess he doesn't have to mutilate himself.
Yeah, ideally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Ronnie Lotwood.
Hey, if you had to cut off a digit, what would you cut off? How do you not have an answer ready to go?
Pinky toe.
Pinky toe's way too important.
You think?
Yeah.
For what?
Balance.
Ring toe.
Maybe. I would have said pinky on my left hand. I'd give up my left pinky. Don't need it. In fact, I'm going to get rid of it after this show's done. I'm really not.
Well, the pinky on my left hand is the finger that is damaged.
Yeah, what do you need it for? So, it's already a bum finger. It's useless to you.
How would you reach the Q on the keyboard?
Oh, dude, just you gotta one finger type with each hand. you gotta type like the really.
Honestly,
old
no, I would typing would become very hard, especially shift wise. I'm not a good using the right pinky on the shift.
And for real, how are you gonna hit that semicolon? You know how often you use that semicolon?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Not at all.
I like to keep all of them.
All right, how about we do that, and then we. And we move on from this weirdly morbid conversation into the other fights of interest, which is also kind of a morbid thing to think about on this terrible card. But Ryan Spann and Bogdan Guskov at 205. I'm always interested in Ryan Spann fights.
Spann's interesting.
He could be potential fun. For violence is there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't know much about Guskov, to be perfectly honest, but yeah, I'm intrigued. And then Tim Means. I'm always up for a Tim Means fight. He's got Uros Medic in this one. At 170 pounds, you're up for a good Dirty Bird fight, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Anything else?
Not really, no.
Yeah, that's about me, too. I got it. And as far as our contested rounds candidate, I put down Ivana Petrovic against Liang Na at women's flyweight. I am playing the percentages on this one.
Can't go wrong.
I feel like it's going to happen. I think we're definitely talking about this fight at some point.
All right, that does it.
Once again.
Yeah, we'll be back with some more warehouse stuff.
Yay!
Next Monday.
Yeah. We like to talk about warehouses.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening.
Take care, y'all.